Let's get back to more Gabe Ramirez on 104.3 The Score.
Here's a swing and a fly ball. Deep right field. It's got a chance. Get out the tape measure. Long gone for Pete Pro Armstrong. Cubs lead 3-0.
In just a couple of weeks, you'll be able to hear that voice, Pat Hughes, calling live Cub games during the regular season right here on 104.3 The Score in crystal clear FM. Think about that. It's going to be a glorious day. Of course, you're going to hear more bombs like that from PCA. And if you just heard John Heyman dropping the news that Michael Conforto, former New York Met, former San Francisco Giant, last year playing with the Los Angeles Dodgers, has made his way to the North Side. I'm curious your thoughts. That's what we're doing, taking some phone calls. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you all the way till 5 o'clock. It's when Dustin Rhodes takes over. And then today, speaking of Pat Hughes, another part of that trio, of course, Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, and Zach Zaidman. Zach Zaidman will be filling in today for Mully, so you'll be able to hear more from him. And I'm sure they'll be breaking down the Michael Conforto signing and what that means for your Chicago Cubs. But you get the opportunity to talk about it right now. Let's go out to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Let's go to Daniel out in Skokie. Daniel, first of all, welcome to the show. Glad you're here at 2 in the morning talking about this, because that's the beauty of the Score being live overnight, is that you get to chat about the breaking news. But I'm curious, initial thoughts about the signing.
So right now, I don't really find it smart, because right now we have Kevin Alcantara, PCA, Ian Happ. And last year, if you see his overall offensive stats, it's not the best, to be honest. But I don't really find this like a very smart signing, to be honest.
Why not?
Because if you just see like overall offensive stats, it's not really that good, to be honest.
Yeah. How confident are you, Daniel, in the outfielders that the Cubs currently have?
I think they have some like good outfielders. Like, I think them trading away Casey kind of like hurt your outfield.
Yeah.
But
Who's your favorite Chicago Cub, Daniel?
PCA.
Can't go wrong with PCA playing center field, right? Do you think he's going to have a big improvement this season?
Yeah. 100%.
100%, right? And talk to me about your hopes for the Chicago Cubs this year, Daniel.
I think they're gonna go on and win the NL Central, to be honest, because them signing Alex Bregman really helps them at third base, and them getting back Justin Steele and acquiring Edward Cabrera helps them a lot.
Yeah, you want that pitching. Big help in the pitching, right? Get another frontline starter. You have a team, obviously, with Alex Bregman. You're shoring up a position that has been a sore spot for the Cubs for some years. Obviously, that's why they were looking at Alex Bregman last year as well. And you're looking for continued improvement from your young players, right? I think that's why most Cubs fans are excited about this season. How do you feel about World Series aspirations? Do you think that that's something that the Cubs can get, or do you think that's still a couple years away?
To be honest, I think they can, but like as of right now, it's probably like Dodgers holding them back. It's probably the Dodgers holding them back since like I don't know where they get all this cash from and everything. It's honestly crazy, to be honest.
It is crazy. Well, Daniel, I appreciate you hanging out and calling in, because, again, it is breaking news. You're the first person to call in and talk about it, so make sure tomorrow, you know, when you're at school or whatever that is, let people know you were on the radio, all right?
All right, bye.
Of course. Take it easy, Daniel. Gotta love that stuff. I remember calling into stations all the time. 2 a.m., maybe he just had to use the restroom. And then he just found out that, the Cubs signed Michael Conforto and wanted to get himself over there. I remember, so Eddie and Jobo used to do the morning show at B96. I remember calling in one time and doing, like, karaoke, like 50 Cent in the club. You know, like, doing something like that when I was young.
So you're singing 50 Cent?
Yeah. You can find me in the club. as a young kid singing "Bottles in the Club," like that. But I think that's you do it. You call in radio stations, what you do. Hopefully Daniel, in I don't know how old he is, but I would say 15 years. Grant, maybe he's sitting in your chair producing. You know, maybe he's sitting over here. You know, talking on the mic. You never know. You know what I mean?
Best of luck to Daniel.
He's like, don't do it.
Never said that.
I know you did it because you love your job.
I love my job.
These are the things you got to say when you're working at 2 a.m. and you're producing the show. I love my job. I want to be here.
This is great. I want it. I am not anticipating a phone call at 8 a.m.
Not at all. Oh, man. But yeah, if you didn't hear, John Heyman announcing Cubs signing Michael Conforto, adding some outfield depth to the Chicago Cubs. And if, as a Cubs fan, I mean, it tells me one thing, right? That the Cubs are done pretending that depth doesn't matter. This is something that they dealt with last year. And obviously, I think when you're thinking about the strength of the Chicago Cubs, pitching, right? The depth of pitching is where it's at. But it's about everywhere else. And moving Matt Shaw to the outfield, granted, you know, a professional baseball player, seems very capable, but you don't want to leave yourself pelado, would be the word in Spanish, right? Where you want to, you know, caught off guard without, you know, clothes, I just bare naked. So Michael Conforto isn't just some, you know, guy that you're saying to yourself, okay, we signed. That's why you're dropping it at 2 a.m. It isn't a we won the offseason move, right? It's a calculated gamble on left-handed bat that has real big league pedigree. This is a guy who has a proven track record. And sometimes you just need guys like that. Because those are the guys also that, you know, and it's exactly why the Dodgers signed him because last year. Because you want guys that play better when they're on better teams, right? That they understand the severity of the moment. And so, you know, that's what it is. He was a disappointment last year with the Dodgers, as mentioned, just a 637 OPS. He had a minus 0.6 war over the full season. But that's tough because your replacement on the Dodgers is going to be very good. So that's a little tough. But why do you do it? It's because the Cubs are saying we're not letting the season get derailed by an injury. I mentioned that before. Or some cold stretch in the outfield. They happen inevitably. So Conforto gives you that veteran who can give you some at-bats, gives you the lefty hook off the bench, and if there is any bounce back, even at all, any bounce back, suddenly you got some sneaky useful bat in the middle of the lineup or the bottom third of the lineup. And if it doesn't work out, so what? It's a low commitment roster move. You're not done there. So, again, are you cool with a smart dev move like that? Or are you tired of these, you know, marginal moves that the Cubs are making? We definitely want to take those because the phone lines are open. Again, Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you here on 104.3 The Score. And we got a slew of things that we've been discussing all day, right? First and foremost, of course, Team USA getting the big victory against Canada to take home the gold medal. So now the men and the women. Wow, what a special year for hockey in the United States. A year that was supposed to be dominated by men's soccer. And now, you know, as we're walking into March, baseball is about to start, World Baseball Class, everything. And then you're getting two gold medals from USA Hockey. Really says a lot. And I had the opportunity to talk to, you know, NHL insider Frank Saravalli, myself, David Hall, Ruthie Polinsky on the Chicago lead on CHSN. And he's a brilliant mind. He's one of those guys where, you know, we do like when you do radio a lot and you're just, you know, you're interviewing a lot of people. Sometimes you're unfamiliar with people's work. And Frank Saravalli, I'd heard of him. I knew what he did. But now having spoken to him several times over, you genuinely appreciate people that are actual brains. And Frank Saravalli is just that. Like the way he talks about hockey and how in-depth he is, it's just phenomenal. And I actually asked him. I had a chance to talk to him, and we were talking about the defensive Team USA and the offense of Team Canada. And before the gold medal game on Sunday, we talked on Friday. And I want you to listen to what he thought the differentiator could be in this gold medal game.
Yeah, they're going to need him, Frank, and it begs the question, right? When you're looking at these two teams, obviously a lot of offensive firepower. But in your mind, the gold medal, who wins it? Is it going to be the team that scores the most or the team that plays the best defense?
Man, it's a great question because these two teams, they're superpowers at different ends of the ice. The U.S. has assembled perhaps the best defense corps that's been in an Olympics in 24 years. And Canada, on the other hand, has that firepower that is so enviable up front, but they don't have the defense or the goaltender to make it happen. And so this is going to be a battle of wills. And I think moving forward, watching these two teams, they've both allowed the same number of goals, 8 goals against in the 5 games that they've each played. But they arrive at this in totally different paths. Canada was dominant through the preliminary round stage, and they have the tougher group. The U.S. was just kind of okay at times, but they've seemed to have found their game at the right time, and they absolutely slaughtered Slovakia from the puck drop in the semifinal. So the U.S. arrives playing better hockey of late, and if Sidney Crosby is that question, coupled with the idea that Quinn Hughes did not play in the Four Nations Championship game last year, you could see tipping the scales maybe 52-53% to the U.S., but it truly is a coin flip heading into this gold medal game that we've all been waiting for.
Frank Saravalli hanging out with us on the Chicago Lead. Again, myself, David Hall, Ruthie Polinsky. We had the chance to talk to him Friday, and it was just great stuff. Frank's just so good, and he's been calling it out, you know, talking about, you know, this team and how good they've been playing. But he mentioned it, right, where earlier in the tournament that, you know, USA was going to have to get by Sweden. That was going to be a tough match, and who knew if the actual crash course was going to be there, Canada versus USA, and that's ultimately happened. And we'll get an opportunity to hear from Kevin Weeks in just a little bit. He was on the Westwood One airwaves with our girls, Kate Constable and
Chris Mack.
They did a great job, and so we'll get a chance to hear from that in just a second. But again, phone lines are open. Whether you want to talk about what this meant, Team USA getting the victory over Team Canada, obviously, Cubs signing Michael Conforto, any thoughts you might have there. And then, of course, as always, chatting some Bears. Combine starting this week. Where should the Bears go with that 25th pick? Is it protecting the quarterback or hunting the quarterback? Of course, we're talking about a tackle or something to help on the defensive line. But in the meantime, let's go out to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Let's go to Michael out in Streamwood. Michael, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, man, I just wanted to call him because I've just been saying, the last caller, I'm sure he's, hopefully he's still listening, but I was like, you said when you were 15, I was on my learner's permit when I first heard you on Kiss FM. When you brought it up, I was just like, I got to call in, like, say what's up, man, because I'm 33, 34 now. We lose count, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been 15, 20 years, and it's just, I just wanted to say, like, I'm following you, and it's, congratulations on all your success. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, Michael.
It's 2 a.m., but
I appreciate that, brother. Thanks, man. I appreciate
you've been doing the Lollapaloozas and all those things. Like, I'm in a music festival, too. So, I'm about that. Like, it's just fun, man. I'm glad you're having fun, too.
Well, Michael, you know what? I got to be honest, man. The same way that Caleb Williams is like, hey, man, I want to make Chicago Bears fans proud to be Chicago Bears fans, I think I feel the same way about my people from Chicago, right? So if you're listening to me here,
exactly,
if you're watching me on Marquee, CHSN, Lollapalooza, the Chicago Fire matches, I hope that, you know, you feel proud, like, that's my guy, and I've seen him, you know, grow, and that's something that motivates me. So I appreciate the phone call, man. It means a lot.
I do, and I appreciate it. I'm glad you could say that too, and thank you for saying that. That's all I gotta say. Man, have a good night.
Let's do it.
Go Bears, go Cubbies. Let's go.
You know it. I appreciate you. Another valued member of the Night Owls, right there. And it is. I mean, it is weird. People talk to me all the time. They're like, dude, you got so many jobs. And I'm like, I got 3 kids. I got to pay the bills.
You have mouths to feed.
And I have this saying, it is everywhere all the time. Eat. Everywhere all the time. Eat. And we got to eat. And that's why you got to be everywhere all the time. People asking, like, when I go talk to young people about radio, and I try to tell them, like, how difficult it is and how talented the people that are in radio, you know, it's just, but I also remind them, like, if you want to get in this business, you have to outgrind me. Like, right, like, I'm here. Like, if you like, you want this role, like, even just overnights, like, you want to work overnights at the score, like, you got to outgrind me. Like, and that's hard. That's hard to do. I feel for you. You know what I'm saying? But you can do it. I want to be very clear. You can do it. You just have to have that mindset. Like, if you think I do a lot, like, that's what you got to do in order to be doing this. Like, there, because there's people like me that are grinding at that level that you have to outgrind. And you can. It's very possible, right? But you just, that's the mindset you got to get yourself into. So whether it is Lollapalooza on Hulu, yes, I do that. The Chicago Fire in host. You know how weird it is to be on CHSN on the Chicago League, like tonight, right? Let's say, for example, no, wait. Last week, I was on, yeah, last week, Wednesday and Thursday. Six, and I could talk about this because it's 2 in the morning. 6 p.m., I am on the Chicago lead. 6:30, I'm on Marquee, on the Marquee Sports Network. So I'm on CHSN at 6 and Mark, like, you know.
Like rivals.
That's just, guys, that's what I'm trying to tell you. No one in the city of Chicago, not one person, matter of fact, it will never happen, ever. It will never happen where there is a talent that's on CHSN and on the Marquee Sports Network. It's just, it's a Cubs station and a Sox station. It just will never happen. I happen to have found the loop in the matrix to be able to have done that, right? And now, to be fair, I don't work directly for the Cubs or Marquee. I work for the Chicago Fire, who happen to have a TV show, Emmy award-winning TV show on Marquee Sports Network that I host. And so the two of them, like, that's weird. But again, that's the grind you have to have. When I work on 670, excuse me, on 104.3 The Score, and then I go down to work at B96 in the same day, these things just don't happen. So, you know, nobody pats me on the back, not even my wife sometimes, who's texting me, by the way. But that is neither here nor there. The good news is that I am here for you, right? That I am on the radio, that I enjoy this kind of stuff. You know, I enjoy being on the radio and being a platform for you guys, right? There's people up right now. People are up. It's not just Grant and I. People are up. It's Chicago. This city don't sleep. And so the fact that you get to have breaking news with Michael Conforto coming to the Cubs, that you're able to talk about USA Hockey, that you can chat about the Chicago Bears, you know, on your time. And I don't mind taking phone calls either. That kind of stuff, I enjoy that kind of stuff. And that's why we're here for you. And that's why the phone lines are open. 312-644-6767. Ready to talk about all that stuff. Again, a big day all over. We mentioned some Cubs stuff going on today. Of course, Bears Combine starting this week. We're going to get into that in just a little bit. I don't want to play Weeks right here. Right? Nah. We'll play it on the other side. Give ourselves a little bit. I do want to talk about some Bear Stadium news or stuff, I should say. I feel like that's if I get just, I'm almost inundated with it. Like, when the guy that was talking about it at 12 o'clock that was coming on kind of got me riled up a little bit. But I feel like overall, where this thing stands, I think this is going to be a big week. I think this is going to be a big week for the Chicago Bears and their stadium efforts. Now, to be very clear, on March 3rd, I will be hosting, speaking of the Chicago Fire and my 27,000 jobs, I'll be hosting the groundbreaking ceremony for the Chicago Fire at the 78, where they're going to be having shovels in the ground, ribbon cutting ceremony. And you know what's serious, Grant?
What's shovels in the ground? What's ribbon cutting?
What does that mean? Stadium, what do you mean?
Stadium, you know, development, yeah, you know, further progressing.
I'm telling you, I think this is going to be a big week. Mark my words. I think by Thursday, we'll have some big news on the stadium, at least in terms of direction. But I'll be doing the ribbon cutting ceremony for the Chicago Fire. And you know it's serious. I hosted their luncheon last week, their like kickoff luncheon where the players were at. And one of the front office people comes up to me and they're like, "Hey, so we need you to wear a suit to this groundbreaking ceremony." And mind you, at the luncheon, I was looking fresh. I had a blazer and a button up, but I was fresh. And they were like, "Make sure you wear a suit." Now, I've been working for, this will be my fourth year working for the Fire. I've never once had to wear a suit. So that's how you know it's real serious about this thing. But I always love, you know what else I love in those kinds of moments? It's not too often you're in the same room as a billionaire. You know what I'm saying? It's not too often.
Yes.
You ever been in the room with a billionaire?
Millionaire, but not billionaire. Yeah,
different.
It's different. Yeah, absolutely.
Way different. I've had two run-ins. One, Joe Mansueto, obviously, who owns the Chicago Fire. so nice, such a cool person. Like, you really, yeah, it's just cool to see somebody like that be that cool. So shout out to him. And then one time, I actually had the chance, oddly, before Wrigleyville became its newest iteration under the Ricketts, I had a chance. I was doing a live broadcast from Wrigley Field, and Tom Ricketts just randomly was there. And so my whole morning show crew at the time, it was three of us, he gave us like a tour. He like walked us around Wrigley Field.
Was this during the construction of it?
This was in 2016 when the Cubs were winning the World Series, and we were broadcasting live in the morning. And so we're getting off at like, you know, 10:30-ish. And Tom Ricketts is right there, and he introduces himself. We're meeting him, and he's like, yeah, let me walk you around and show you what we're going to do here.
Oh, so he was introducing you to Gallagher Way.
Yes.
The stuff outside, yes. Like on the left field
exactly.
Side. Exactly. Okay.
So he takes us and lean over the edge, and he's telling us about what's to come and what his vision is. And all I could think about during the whole conversation was like, I can't believe this billionaire is right here. It's like just talking to me like normal. It was really cool. And as a Sox fan, there are moments when you're envious of the front office of the Chicago Cubs, and not just Jed, but the team and the moves that they're making, whether it is the investment around the stadium or the investment in the team. I mean, he did bring them a World Series. So, you know, you have a sense of jealousy in that sense. And I think meeting him that day allowed me to be a little closer to that, because it was a great story and a great moment where in Cubs history, where you get a guy right before winning the World Series is explaining Gallagher Way and, you know, what the improvements were going to be. And, you know, it's just, it's crazy. Again, you're not in those moments too often where you get to be like that.
Yeah. I mean, heck, man. That sounds pretty cool.
I'm not a billionaire, Grant. So I can't give you the luxury of being in the room with a billionaire. My bad.
Yeah, sorry about that. But
no, I'm sorry.
Maybe one day you'll get up there. No, then I can say it.
I've gotten rid of those dreams.
Does count? Like, does it, so? Like, I've been in like football stadiums where I went to one game.
Okay,
because I was going to say I went to one game in Kansas City where Roger Goodell was there.
Yeah, no. I'm talking about like shake hands. What's up, brother?
Nope. You know, haven't done that yet.
I know. It's a humbling feeling when you're shaking their hands. It's humbling because you're like, damn. Because you know,
and
you
the hand is so smooth.
This hand has never had a day of manual labor in your life. That's how your hands are so soft.
Maybe you never know, but yeah.
One of my I'll never forget. This reminds me of something. One of my drug dealing cousins. Right, that's talking about like big drug dealing cousins. I'll never forget being a teenager. And him putting his hand out and being like, cousin, look at my hand. And I'm like, he made me touch his hand. It was like, you see how soft this hand is? I ain't never worked a hard day in my life. Never forget.
That's such a weird flex, but okay, man.
It's a great flex because I got it in the moment. I was like, I get it. Your ass don't be working. You sell drugs. I get it. Your hands are soft because you haven't picked up a hammer in your life.
But it also means it's not, you know, working out with like the dumbbells and stuff, you know, because you're not forming those calluses.
Hey, nope. Pudgy, bunch of women, like that's just he didn't need to do it.
Okay.
And there we go. Funny, but that I'll never forget that. That's funny. So yeah. Rich hands feel different. Rich hands feel different than other hands.
They feel green.
Oh my God. All right, we're gonna take a break. On the other side, Kay Constable, Chris Mack had a really interesting conversation with Kevin Weeks about the gold medal won by Team USA. And he's going to break it down, all the nuances. We'll get to that on the other side. But we're also taking phone calls, whether you want to chat about the Chicago Bears, the latest move from the Chicago Cubs, or if you're a billionaire and you got soft hands and you want to call in as well, we won't shy away from that.
I think they're all asleep.
That's maybe 312-644-6767. Your call's on the other side. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on 104.3 The Score.
Let's get back to more Gabe Ramirez on 104.3 The Score.
Shout out to all my Salsa fans. Little Bad Bunny right there. Grant Leader producing today. I love that part. I don't want to go too crazy right there. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you here. Live and local. We're in the building. We are inside our downtown studios. Of course, live from our Hyundai studios. The Score Hyundai studios brought to you by our local Hyundai dealers. Michigan and Lake, if you're wondering. People always ask, where are the studios at? Right next to Millennium Park. Right here on Lake in Michigan. It's actually Stetson, but Lake in Michigan, if you ever go to the Nutella store right there on Michigan Avenue, boom, right next to that. And that's where we're at. Back on the Score. And if you're just waking up, USA Hockey, of course, just ripped the heart out of Canada. And I'm not even talking from a political sense. I'm talking about in the gold medal game. Not a shootout, not a fluke, 2-1 in overtime. Oh, that's what I wanted to. I wanted to read what the, and I pulled up the article that the Canadian coach was complaining about the overtime rules. I'm going to pull that up about overtime rules and saying that the 3-on-3 is not hockey. He's like, it's not hockey.
Yeah, it's not hockey, but Sidney Crosby won on a 4-on-4.
Thank you. That's what I was going to. I was definitely going there.
And also the Canadians won. They wouldn't be complaining about 3-on-3 hockey.
Of course. Of course they wouldn't. They'd say how their offense was so powerful that would have been, that's why they won. But according to USA Today, he says about an hour had passed since, of course, Jack Hughes scored that golden goal. But rather than talk strategy, John Cooper, the head coach for Canada, talked about the 3-on-3 overtime and, you know, the magnitude of it. And this is what he said. You take four players off the ice. And now hockey is not hockey anymore. Talk about some. That's bitter. That's bitter.
I thought hockey was created in Canada, though. I thought it was their sport.
You know, they got the frozen ponds over there. There's a reason for overtime and shootouts that are in play, but it's all TV driven to end games. So it's not a long time. There's a reason why 3-on-3 is not in the Stanley Cup final or playoffs. Yeah, because it's the Stanley Cup finals. And this is hockey. It's different. Just like boxing is different. Just like goaltending is allowed in FIBA rules for men's basketball in the Olympics. There are certain adjustments that have to be made. And granted, we feel better about it as Americans as people from the United States of America because we ended up winning. But as Grant pointed out, Canada needed overtime to defeat U.S. at last year's Four Nations face-off. Connor McDavid scoring that winning goal, but that overtime was 5-on-5. And at this year's Olympics, they changed the format to 3-on-3. The IIHF did. And again, this is all from USA Today. This is while the format is something the NHL uses to help decide regular season games, which the casual fan enjoys. Get less people, like, open it up. It's like a soccer match. You'd want open it up. We want to score. We don't want this thing going on forever. So when John Cooper, the head coach of Canada, was asked whether he'd prefer that the IIHF return to the traditional 5-on-5 format, Team Canada coach backtracked on his previous comments, making it clear that he was not using the 3-on-3 format as an excuse for failing to win gold. Really? Here's his quote. All the teams know the rules going into these beforehand, so you can't come up here and say we're the losing team because we lost in a 3-on-3, and that's not fair. We knew the rules coming in. We won a game in this tournament 3-on-3, and that's not the way it is, because Canada defeated Czechia in the quarterfinal with Mitch Marner scoring that goal. But this time, they just couldn't find the back of the net. So Canada, they turned the puck over, and but that's why it's 3-on-3, because it needed to be open. They get the turnover, obviously, just enough spacing where you're able to get the ball to Hughes or get the puck to Hughes in that moment and get the play. And Hughes even mentioned this. It was a great play by Z to get it to Jack. It was great. And Matthew Tkachuk mentioned his goal, making the goalie slide and then put in the 5-hole. How often do we see that, whether it's soccer or hockey? The goalies are so concerned with everything else, and that 5-hole is always open. So if you can get it there fast enough, and that's exactly what Hughes did, getting into that moment. Since it's still skilled players out there making skilled plays. And that's what ended up happening for the Team USA taking on Canada 2-1. So I'm curious, for those of you that are out there that experienced the miracle on ice before the Team USA won the gold medal, love to hear the differences for you. I've heard a lot of people talking about, having their kids watching it and, you know, experiencing it with them. I wonder, you know, what kind of impact you feel like that's going to have on hockey here in the United States. But here on Westwood One, our airwaves, we had Kevin Weeks talking with Kate Constable, Chris Mack, and they had a very insightful conversation at the wrap-up of Team USA versus Canada, and here it is right now on 104.3 The Score.
We are spending the bulk of our afternoon celebrating that gold medal that the men beat the Canadians for. Jack Hughes with the game winner, minus a few chicklets, in overtime to beat Canada. And who better to talk to about all of this on a golden Sunday across the United States than NHL Network and ESPN's Kevin Weeks. Kevin, thank you so much for making the time today, my man. Let's start with, you're a goalie, so you had to appreciate Connor Hellebuck basically standing on his head for the final 40 minutes of regulation of this thing.
Yeah, I thought both goalies were great, and Connor Hellebuck was outstanding for sure. Make no mistake about it. That's the game of his life. He's won three Vezinas, the big Commerce Michigan native. You know, he's had an uneven role so far in the playoffs, in Stanley Cup playoffs. But I got to tell you, man, today he was absolutely outstanding. That was the game of his career. He was money. And as the game kind of swung in terms of the Canadians dominating the shot clock and disproportionately so, and some time in the offensive zone, Connor Hellebuck just kept elevating his game, and he made save after save. That one paddle save he made, like Rafa Nadal, that one save that he made on the on the doorstep there with a stick, his paddle, that was unbelievable. So this was, you need an epic performance in big games, and he certainly had one today. That was a signature performance. He was amazing in this one.
Kevin, thanks for joining us. Maybe the answer to this question is Connor Hellebuck, but you mentioned that the Canadians really dominated that game in terms of shots on goal, time of possession. And for those of us that watched it, like, Canada really maybe should have won that game. What was one of the major reasons that they weren't able to come out on top? And again, maybe that just is Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, listen, the league, the sport, the sport won today. Team USA won, of course. I think both teams just were outstanding in their efforts. But I would say this. Connor Hellebuck, of course, the easy answer because he made a lot of key saves. How about the play by McAvoy? McAvoy made an unbelievable stop himself, the Long Island native. He was great on that. Like, that was a real surefire goal. And Charlie McAvoy made a save. Slavin obviously had a lot of big saves and big deflections, big blocks himself. It's interesting because Slavin told me before, when he started playing in Colorado, playing youth hockey, he started out as a goalie. And I just talked to him about this a couple weeks ago in Carolina. We had their game for ESPN. And I said, having played goalie, like, does that help you as a defenseman, especially to be as defensively dominant as you are? And he goes, absolutely. So anyways, I just think those are some of the factors. And I would also say Team USA's composure, too. They didn't get rattled when the game started tilting, to their credit. They stayed even. They were calm. I like this version of Mike Sullivan. He was calm on the bench. Torts was calm on the bench. The entire coaching staff for Team USA, they stayed calm. They weren't panicking even after Canada got that equalizer. They stayed calm. The game tilted. And something I'm not sure if any of the listeners saw or if you guys saw this yourselves, but when Brady Tkachuk was mic'd up at one point, he's like, guys, let's stay confident. Let's stay confident. Mm-hmm. Believe in here. We're going to win this game. We're going to win this game. It's giving me goosebumps because, you know, I miss those moments as a former goalie in the league and just kind of that type of camaraderie and some of those unseen things that don't necessarily get talked about. And that's why I wanted to highlight that. I was very impressed by Brady on that. And, of course, you know, those are the things that, the ebbs and flows. You have to be able to handle the ebbs and flows in the game. And sometimes those things go unnoticed, but to the trained eyes like ours, I saw that and that really stood out to me.
Yeah, Kevin. And Kevin Weeks is with us here just after the Americans beat the Canadians in the gold medal game. We appreciate him taking the time from ESPN and NHL Network to talk about this game. But one of the things, and I'll own it, like, I was an open critic of Mike Sullivan trying to play that tight checking style that has been his calling card over the years. And I didn't think they'd be able to beat a team as talented as Canada with that style. But you pointed out the calm sort of steadying force of leadership, both on the bench and behind the bench, that helped them weather what felt like a 40-minute power play for the Canadiens. This is a group that I think, and I don't know, you watch juniors much closer than any of us and young guys coming up through the system. This is a group that's played a whole ton of hockey together, these American boys. And the fact that they've probably been in these situations before against the Canadiens, too, a similar group of Canadian players who they've probably played many times internationally, both in World Juniors and in the Four Nations and now at the Olympic level. That steadying force seemed to be something that I think it's a great point you make. How much is that belief bred into you when you've played so many big games together?
Well, I think what it does is it compounds your belief. Belief compounds belief, and winning compounds winning, and experience compounds experience, all those things, right? If we're looking at it from the positive side of the ledger. And yes, there are a lot of those relationships where, you know, all those guys played together at the program, at the NDTP program in Michigan. And then some of them played together in university, in college hockey at Michigan, University of Michigan, among other places. A lot of these guys skate together and live, you know, in Michigan, the Michigan area. A lot of them skate in the Michigan area. A lot of them have played U-17, under-17s for the team, for the national program, under-18. As you mentioned, World Juniors. Some of them played World Championships. And I don't think we can discredit Team USA winning the Worlds last year for the first time in, I think, 70 years, the World Championships this past spring. Now, there are several guys on this team that were on that team. Jeremy Swayman was great in the net on that team. They got a lot of experience, again, in playing together in big pressurized moments. And when you put all that in your calculator and you do the compound interest on all that, to me, to your point, that had a big hand in them believing. It had a big hand in their camaraderie, their belief, their confidence, and ultimately their performance. And, you know, I'm going to say this. I'll share this with the listeners. We did the Pittsburgh Penguins game, Rangers at Penguins, two Saturdays ago, I believe, if not three, on ABC for ESPN. And speaking to Mike Sullivan before the game, I asked Sully, I said, in our coaches meeting, I said, Sully, what, give me a key for your group for Team USA. Like, well, what a key? I know you guys are playing. It's a home game here in Pittsburgh. You got the Rangers, a big game. We got you on ABC. But what will be the key? He goes, BC, not only for our team, but for any and every team in that tournament, is how quickly we can gel. How quickly we can come together as one and, you know, accept our roles, accept the situations we get put in, you know, all those things, put our egos aside. And, you know, obviously Team Canada, Team USA, and some of the other teams did a great job of it. But with Team USA winning the gold medal, that was a real big part of what Mike Sullivan spoke about. And it was a big part of their emphasis and their focus coming into the tournament and throughout the tournament. And it certainly showed its face on the most important stage here in the gold medal game, and ultimately had a big hand in them winning.
Kevin, what does today's loss for the Canadiens do for the rest of the NHL season for these players as they go back to their respective teams? Is it more of a motivator for them, or do you think they kind of come out of this a little deflated going back to NHL play?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. And the reason why I say that is, you know, if you're Nate MacKinnon, who happened to be on the wrong side of that play defensively, but you're a league MVP caliber player. You've won the Stanley Cup with Colorado. You know, you've got a lot of history of winning internationally for Team Canada, and obviously for Colorado winning the Stanley Cup for the Avalanche. It hits hard. You're disappointed, of course. You're gutted, but at least you have a history of winning. You know, I would say maybe for Connor McDavid, who's the best player in the game, best player in the world. Now Edmonton's gone to two straight Stanley Cup final. They lost both. Now, obviously, last year they won the Four Nations faceoff, but now they lose the gold medal in the Olympics after just losing to Stanley Cup final to the Florida Panthers. I'm sure that just compounds the sting. Does that make him hungrier, so to speak? Maybe, but you know, that's a great question because I think it's a case by case basis. Obviously, Sidney Crosby was injured today. He's one of the best players in the history of the game. And he's won those three cups in Pittsburgh. You know, he's played in four Stanley Cups. So I think it'll affect each player differently on the losing side of it. But one thing I can tell you on the other side of it is I've lived in both countries for the exact amount of time, 25 years each. And I'm a proud dual citizen of both countries. We live in the U.S. We're New Yorkers, Metro New Yorkers. And this double gold, really triple, well, you go back to the World Championships last year for the men, obviously. But then at the Olympics here, winning women's and men's double gold on top of that. I think this is going to be a monumental moment for the game and the history of the game. And the sport is growing so much. We've seen it, especially among girls, record registrations among girls hockey, youth hockey, boys hockey. We're seeing players from different places now, not only traditional, quote unquote, traditional hockey markets, but we're seeing people from Florida, like the Hughes brothers. You know, you're seeing Austin Matthews, who's from Arizona, born in LA, but raised in Arizona. You know, I can kind of go on and on. And that to me signifies the growth of the game. And this will supercharge that growth because you get people that don't necessarily watch hockey that were tuning in to the Olympics. And, you know, now there's probably a rooting interest. And, hey, now I can identify with the Tkachuk brothers out of St. Louis. So I could identify with Jack and Quinn Hughes as, you know, two American players that grew up in Florida / Toronto / now Detroit. And they just happen to be Jewish. You know, there's a lot of storylines and lifelines, I think, that will connect a lot more people to the game now as a result of today.
Only got about 45 seconds here, Weeksy, before we let you run. But your feelings, what do you think? Do you think Sidney Crosby will be back for the Olympics in 2030 as a 42-year-old in France?
If there's anybody that could do it, it's him. I never bet against superheroes. I was in touch with him via text a couple nights ago, albeit he's from over there, so different time zone. But I don't put anything past Sidney Crosby. I learned very early in my career, playing against the greats like Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux and some of the others, never bet against superheroes. And that's during my playing career and as a broadcaster and getting to know, you know, Sid as well as I do and some of these other players, I wouldn't bet against it.
Great stuff, Kevin. We appreciate the time so much. Enjoy the rest of the weekend that's left. And again, we appreciate you taking the time in the immediate aftermath of this gold medal game to jump on with us for a couple minutes.
No problem. Thank you both for having me on. And thanks to listeners for tuning in and appreciate you having me. Thank you.
That was Kevin Weeks on Westwood One. Kate Constable, Chris Mack did a phenomenal job interviewing him. And you heard him mention it, right? The impact that it should have on hockey. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you on 104.3 The Score. Team USA defeating Team Canada in overtime. The golden goal by Jack Hughes. The assist by Zach Werenski. Connor, and then, of course, I mean, just a great moment for all things involved. And of course, USA, it felt like they ripped the heart out of Canada in that gold medal game, essentially, is what's going on there. No shootout, no fluke, just 2-1 in overtime. A game where, you know, again, Canada threw everything at Team USA and they just absorbed it, whether it was 5-on-3, penalty kills, you know, just a phenomenal defensive performance by Team USA. They stayed composed and they finished when they had the chance and when it mattered most. And that is where we're at right now. And what makes it even crazier is that it wasn't just the men, right? The women also beat them 2-1 in the gold medal game earlier. Just a double gold. A double gold in the biggest rivalry in sports says so much about it. So does it feel like Team USA is owning the international hockey area right now? Obviously, you heard Kevin Weeks talk about, you know, the players and adding, bringing new players into the sport. But I would piggyback on to that and say that it even reinforces what's going on currently in youth hockey. If you're a high school player, think about that. If you're in high school right now playing hockey, these are the people that get motivated the most, right? You're 13 to 18-year-olds, and you just witnessed Team USA bring home the gold. You now have elevated your game. He mentioned, you know, the Hughes, Boldy, the Hellebuck. I mean, guys that they're going to be looking toward. These are going to be their superstars. These are going to be these posters on the wall. But you've motivated this youth, this next generation, and you've given them the opportunity to know that it's believable.
Okay, there was a Pee Wee hockey game going on in North Carolina. And if you go and search the video, like a Pee Wee hockey North Carolina, there's a face-off about to happen. And you can see all the players like just turn around towards the bench and just jump up and start screaming. As soon as the Jack Hughes goal happened, you could see. And then they all stop playing, all go run to the benches and go high-five and celebrate. And then they go back and play hockey. It's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine that last period? And then that game, I mean, that must have been intense. Like,
imagine a Pee Wee football game going on and it's right. Bears and Packers and they're about to snap the ball. And then they hear on Caleb the Williams sidelines, Caleb throwing the DJ Moore for the touchdown. And they all stop and just run to their sidelines and celebrate. That's the same feeling.
That is the feeling. And it is one that's going to resonate throughout, you know, the United States, because you know, with Patrick Kane, with the Blackhawks, I mean, they birthed a generation of American-born hockey players, and we see what happens as a result of it. And, you know, Kevin Weeks mentioned these guys have been playing together, you know, for so long, and not just with each other, but against these Canadians and that powerhouse as well. And to be able to come back and to put off the victory, it says a ton. So, of course, Matt Boldy kicking off the scoring in the first period. It just, it seemed, and it was so, all of a sudden, you see the shots to the crowd. The Canadian fans are stunned. The USA fans are going crazy because there's that level of believability that creeps in. Then in the second, Kale gets the job done. And then that's when, like, you heard the Canadian fans really going crazy at that point, because I'm sure in their mind, they're like, yeah, we back and we're definitely going to win this thing. But the defense of Team USA held on. They were outshot 42-28. So this was an aggressive Canadian team, but as mentioned, that's where their advantage was on the offensive side. Team USA putting together one of the better defensive units in Olympic hockey for Team USA. And obviously it comes to really help them out at the very end. And then Hellebuck stopped 41-42 shots. It's what you ultimately want in these types of situations, because it does make a big impact, and we'll see more of it. Again, Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you here, 104.3 The Score, leading you right into 5 o'clock. That's when Dustin Rhodes takes over with the pregame show. And then today, filling in for Mully, we got Zach Zaidman. He'll be handling business. And all week today, we got a handful of people that will be stepping in. Zaidman, I think, is going to be here Monday, Friday. Ruthie Polinsky will be here Tuesday. And then Clay Harbor steps in on Wednesday and Thursday. So make sure you check them out. And then, of course, myself, David Hall, Ruthie Polinsky, tonight, 6 p.m., the Chicago lead on CHSN, which will be simulcasting the morning show from 7 to 9 o'clock on CHSN. But if you keep it there, you'll be able to check us three out on the Chicago lead. And I know we'll be talking about it all. For sure, men's hockey and what has been going on here. The recent signing, we broke it a second ago, John Heyman pointing out that the Chicago Cubs signing Michael Conforto, former New York Met, former San Francisco Giant, spent the last year with the Los Angeles Dodgers. A lefty bat for the Chicago Cubs to add some outfield insurance. Obviously, there's been rumblings that Matt Shaw has been taking some time out there to be a utility type of outfielder. But Michael Conforto being, you know, a veteran guy that can give you some good at-bats, and who knows, could be an opportunity for the Chicago Cubs to buy low on a guy that could potentially make a difference. But a lot of things going on. But more importantly, this is one that I think is interesting. So a lot of talk has been happening with the Chicago Bears and obviously where they're going to be moving, legislature taking place in Indiana and Illinois. But nobody's really been talking about what's going to happen with Soldier Field. And so there is a plan that is out there right now, an article that dropped, where Soldier Field's lawmakers are calling for an exorbitant amount of money. Chicago Park District has a plan in place to remake Soldier Field. But what is their plan for Soldier Field, and how much money are they trying to invest in it? And why isn't that money going towards the Chicago Bears to stay there? We will discuss all that about your calls next. 312-644-6767 is Gabe Ramirez, live and local for you, ready to take your phone calls on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.